All right, it's a pleasure to bring Marty Appel in. And Marty, I told everyone about you and your background in baseball, and the book is Casey Stengel, Baseball's Greatest Character. I love the book. Tell us a little bit more about you and the Yankees, though, because you had, at age 19, you're answering Mickey Mantle's fan mail, and George Steinbrenner hired you as the PR guy, but just as a kid.
It's true. I grew up a Yankee fan. My first memory is the 1955 World Series. And so it's almost been a straight line for me in terms of a connection to the team. But I actually went to work for them doing Mickey's fan mail in 1968, eventually became their PR director, their TV producer, and now I write books that have Yankee themes by and large.
Well, this one I really like a lot. Now, did you get to meet Casey at some point? You must have. Cause...
I did. Late in his life, he, after the Yankees fired him following the 1960 World Series, he kind of boycotted the Yankees. He was very upset. So he didn't come back to an old-timers' day for 10 years. And by then, I was in the PR department, and I was kind of the point person in making arrangements for him. So on five old-timers' days, I was connected to him, and that was a thrill to be with there with Casey Stengel.
Boy, it's great. And tell us about the book. And, of course, I don't even have to ask why, because he is one of the most colorful characters in baseball history. If you look 1910 to 1975 or whenever, he was connected to baseball in some way. But tell us about Casey and why the book.
Well, actually, the genesis for the book was when MLB Network named him baseball's greatest character in the history of baseball. I mean, he beat Babe and Yogi and Dizzy and Satchel. So my editor at Doubleday contacted me and said, you know, it's been 35 years since there was a Casey Stengel book. How about taking it on? And I was a little intimidated because Bob Creamer's book in the 80s was a terrific book.
Yep, yes, it was.
But I had material available to me that wasn't available to Bob back then before the internet. I was able to go to the old newspapers that were digitally archived from his minor league towns. I was able to find anecdotes that had been buried for a century. And I was given by his family a memoir written by his wife Edna in 1958 that was never published. So that gave me a look at another side of the man.
Well, it's amazing. And, you know, in thinking about Casey and all the different aspects of his life, he is a New York Giant and John McGraw. And, you know, we always think of him. I'm a little bit older than you. And, you know, I always thought of him in number 37, sort of bow-legged, walking out to the mound for the Yankees and pointing from the dugout. But he had a whole other life. And part of it was the New York Giants and a major part of the New York Giants.
Yeah, it's true. He was part of their pennant-winning teams in 21, 22, and 23. He was a World Series hero in 1923. He hit the first World Series home run ever at Yankee Stadium and inside the Parker. And he sat next to John McGraw in the Polo Grounds dugout and learned a lot of baseball from him. And when he finally became a manager, he was channeling John McGraw's wisdom, as later on, Billy Martin, his disciple, was channeling Casey.
And it goes to Lou Piniella, who channeled Billy to some degree. It's amazing the tree of managerial of all the personalities of where it comes from. Marty Appel is with us. Casey Stengel is the name of the book, Baseball's Greatest Character. What are some of the things you learned about him? Because, and I'll bring it to you this way, he managed so many teams without much notoriety. He was considered sort of a clown, came out to the West Coast with the Oakland Oaks and kind of was very successful. And then 1949, the Yankees grabbed him. So what about that part of Casey's life?
Well, you have to realize, and not a lot of fans do, that when there were only 16 teams, that Pacific Coast League was practically the equivalent of Major League Baseball today. When you have 30 teams today and you only had 16 then, you just say the next 14 good teams were the equivalent of Major Leagues. And when he won the Pacific Coast League Championship with Oakland, that was a terrific team he was managing. It was a lot of seasoned veteran players and young Billy Martin, who was just arriving on the scene. So winning in 48 with Oakland, where he became the toast of the town with ticker tape parade and the Cadillac given to him, that kind of orbited him in the baseball universe. And the Yankees had that opening after Bucky Harris had been fired. And George Weiss, an old friend of his for many years, was the general manager of the Yankees, and he reached out and hired Casey. People in baseball, their sensibilities were just unnerved, because this was an unsuccessful major league manager at Brooklyn and at Boston. Fine, he had achieved success at Oakland, but this was a strange choice for the high and mighty Yankees. And all he does is go out and win five straight world championships.
What would you like the readers to take away after reading the book on Casey Stengel? What would you like them to know about him?
Readers will discover that to him, baseball was everything. 365 days a year, if he wasn't managing or watching, he was reading the sporting news. He had no hobbies, he had no other interests, but the universe of baseball was wide for him. He never big-leagued anybody. He considered fans, he considered autograph seekers to be part of the industry, and he was great with everyone. His home address was listed in the phone book. He welcomed people to his door at Glendale, California. And he was just a great ambassador for the game, because he was so magnanimous in his approach to the public.
He didn't get along with Joe DiMaggio, though, did he?
That was tough. Everybody had their eyes on how that relationship would unfold. And the very first day of the very first spring training, Casey read the rules of spring training in the clubhouse, and it included that the players weren't allowed to go to the dog track at night. Well, everyone knew that's what DiMaggio did every night. So what a line in the sand on the first day. But DiMaggio went anyway. And Casey simply said, well, I have no firsthand knowledge of that. I wasn't there. And let it be. So they found a way to coexist. I mean, today, 2,500 cell phone photos of Joe at the dog track and headlines saying, what now, Casey?
that would be New York. Well, you lived in New York, and boy, you had a tremendous job with the Yankees. Now, Casey has another part of his life. Two things I want you to talk about. The first I want to talk about is his wife, Edna. And what I like about the book, and different than Bob Cremer's book, which was terrific, is the personal memoirs of Edna, and really understanding their relationship, and it really explains who Casey was through Edna.
Yes, there was this other side of him. She was a very classy woman, originally from Wisconsin, but her family developed Glendale, California, and built the family home where they all lived. And then when her parents died, Casey and Edna lived there. Beautiful home. Edna managed Casey's finances. All the paychecks went to Edna. He never gave her a present, she wrote. No Christmas present, no birthday present. He just said, here's all my money, get whatever you need.
All right, very good. Now, look, Edna, but very wealthy. I mean, first of all, Casey had a side of him, too. He was an oil man and got very lucky in the oil business. And, of course, Edna had the bank in Glendale and the Lawson family, a tremendous family in Glendale. But Casey started making some dough, too.
I didn't realize that as I began my research. Even people in baseball close to Casey thought he had a lot of money because he was a vice president at the bank. But it turned out in 1937, he was given an opportunity to invest in an oil field in Texas. The oil came in, still producing oil to this day, and checks go to the Stengel estate. It made him a wealthy man who didn't even need his baseball salary for the rest of his life. So that was a wonderful moment for Casey, and gave him the independence to just do whatever he wished.
Well, and he brought some of his buddies along with him, some people who were still he was competing with, like Al Lopez.
Yeah, Al Lopez was the best known of the half dozen or so who invested with him. It was a tip from a teammate whose father had given the chance to invest in the oil field. So what a lucky thing that was. And of course, as soon as I came on that, I said, oh boy, I got to learn about oil fields now. So it sounds like I know what I'm talking about.
Yeah, it's good. Well, the book is, I really enjoyed it. I recommend it to everybody. It's called Casey Stengel, Baseball's Greatest Character. Marty Appel, A-P-P-E-L, wrote it. To just wrap it up with you, then, of course, he has a whole new life with the New York Mets, the amazing Mets. And Casey was the symbol of the futility, really, of the Mets. But he made it fun.
Before he agreed to go to the Mets, the Yankees had fired him. He was home in Glendale in 1961, and he had two very serious offers to return as manager. One of them was Horace Stoneham of the Giants calling and asking him if he'd come and manage in San Francisco. So that was the job that ultimately went to Alvin Dark. Casey turned down all offers that year. And then George Weiss, who by then was president of the Mets, reached out to him and said, we need you, Casey. This is the first year. It's going to not be a very good team. And we need somebody to divert attention away from the field and win over the hearts of all the New York National League baseball fans who were felt abandoned by the Giants and the Dodgers leaving. Well, Casey was perfect in that role. Whereas with the Yankees, even in that last year at age 70, he was still fully engaged in every baseball moment during the games, during the weeks. With the Mets, he knew it was a PR job. He let his coaches run the games. He let Richie Ashburn, his center fielder, kind of manage the game in progress. And Casey could be seen snoozing in the dugout. But after 4 years, he broke his hip, and that was the end of his active service.
Yeah, amazing, amazing. Well, the amazing Mets, and that's what Casey did. And, of course, I love his line when the Yankees let him go. He said, I'll never make the mistake of being 70 again.
And none of us should.
No, it's one of the great lines of all time. But he regretted a little bit not in 1960, that World Series with the Pirates, and the Yankees just outslugged them every game until the very end. The 10-9 game, the Mazeroski hit the home run. But he always lamented the fact that, and I think the Yankees did too, they didn't start Whitey Ford earlier in that series.
Yeah, and, you know, another thing that we explore in the book is people who really know their baseball history know that Whitey pitched two shutouts in that series and won 10-0 and 12-0. And if you're looking ahead to a Game 7, you say, well, why did we have to have Whitey pitch complete games with those kind of leads? We could have pulled him after 5 or 6 innings, as certainly might have happened today, and had him fresh for Game 7. So that was kind of another error that was made because people didn't think in those terms back then.
Yeah, well, it's an interesting part of Casey. The Mets, the Dodgers, the Giants and the Yankees. I don't think there's anyone else who touched all those teams in that way.
And no.
Very, very special guy. And the other part, when he was in Boston and he was having very little success, and he was struck by a taxi driver and broke his leg, and he was out for the year, and they wanted to give the taxi driver the MVP award. So.
They wanted to give the taxi driver the man who did the most for Boston baseball in 1943.
And that's where he came from. And then all of a sudden he ended up with the Yankees and it becomes, the greatest ever. So it's really a lot of fun. I had fun reading it and I think you did a great job. And the part that Edna added to this makes it a very different book than what had come out before. So, Marty, good job.
Thank you so much. And thanks for having me.
Very good. Like having him on. All right.